All right. Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Vamp Podcast. I am here tonight with Cam Banks of Margaret Weiss Productions. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine.
Really appreciate you joining us. I know you've been terribly busy because you've been working on Marvel Heroic Roleplaying.
I have. There's so much stuff that happens near the end of production, including rolling out all these big launch parties through retail stores across North America, that I haven't had a moment to take a breath yet.
Before I forget, while you mention that, if someone's interested in finding out if there's a launch party close to them, is there a someplace on the Margaret Weiss website they can find that out?
Yes, in fact, by the time this podcast is live, you should have a list there of where the different events are going on. And I think some of them may already have happened, and some of them may not happen until the second week of March, even. So, it's spread out.
Very nice. And lest I forget, our co-host, returning co-host, is Stacey Montgomery. How are you doing?
Hello, Stacey? There.
Hey, thank you for joining us again.
It is entirely my pleasure.
Stacey is a resident expert on all things Cortex. So we invite
Am
you.
I?
You're the person I know who knows the most about Cortex, with the possible exception of Jack Norris. So,
congratulations.
This is a great honor, and I promise not to do anything that will embarrass the Academy.
You'll be getting a gift basket from BAMF Podcast in the mail. Make sure to look for it.
I'll look forward to that.
It's mainly cheese slices. But, yeah, okay, hey, that joke fell flat, but we can keep on rolling. all right, Cam, so as Stacey was asking before we got started, why don't we just start at the beginning. How did this happen? Because this is kind of a huge coup.
Yeah, I just want to say it's well known in the industry, well known, that the last Marvel role-playing game didn't go the way Marvel wanted it, and that they would never do another one. I think a lot of us were very surprised when we heard that you guys had landed this property.
Well,
so
I guess
it happened.
Technically, they haven't done one, which is that's why we're doing it. You know, when we approached them for Marvel initially, we thought we'd try something smaller, maybe tie it into a movie, because Thor was about to come out, and we knew that Captain America was imminent, and then Avengers, you know, for next year. So we thought we'd approach them maybe from the cinematic side of things or something like that. When we met with them and we went back and forth with these people who are all fantastic, these folks in licensing and legal, they actually really wanted us to take on Marvel Universe. That was the property, the classic Marvel characters from the comic books, the source material for all the other things that come out of Marvel. So not the movies, not the TV cartoons, the actual comic book universe. And when that happened, we just took a big deep breath and said, yep, that's what we're going to do. We'll do that.
Yeah, I mean, what do you say but yes in that situation?
Right. I have to admit, I was initially fairly intimidated by that idea because, as you imagine, I mean, you know, you have to try and create a game using our system, using Cortex, that doesn't somehow shortchange the people at the top end and the people at the lower end of power scales and those characters who are more popular versus those who are more obscure. So that was my initial concern. You know, we said, well, let's just take on Marvel. We'd already done things like Smallville before, which have a different focus, and yet here we are talking about actual comic book adventure. So we had no excuses, really, for not grabbing it by the horns.
Yeah, I know I've seen you tweet once or twice about the pressure, and I've got to admit, this might kill a lesser man, because you know somewhere out there, you know, there's the deep flame pits of online disdain where fanboys are sharpening their knives and arching their eyebrows snarkily, just waiting to see the PDF.
Yeah, I don't want to let them go without having some fresh red meat to try and attack. It's not a problem.
You're a brave man.
I am. Well, I don't know if I'm brave, maybe foolish, but we'll see. I'm always confident enough that we've had such great turns at playtesting. We've had such great people contributing and helping us out. Although I was tasked to be the actual person who wrote the game, I had a wonderful core team who were concept designers. Those individuals who threw things at me and said, here's some things, you know, that I think would be great to have in the game. You have to try and take on this aspect of Marvel, you have to do this or that. And with that kind of resources at hand, I went ahead and went straight into it. And I think that after playtests and revisions and editing and development and everything else that's come since, this is the best mobile game we could do, and I don't think we could do a better one, so it's the one that we're going to go forward with.
Very nice. And while we're talking about your power behind the throne, as it were, your brain trust, anybody want to give a hat tip to you while we're talking about that?
Yeah, we had... So, Matt Forbeck, who had worked on a lot of Marvel licensing things before, he's done a lot of product tie-ins. He contributed to the Marvel Encyclopedia from DK Publishing. So he was my first choice for someone I would bring on who had dealt with Marvel and licensing and knew the characters and the audience, too, because you could go to Matt and say, what do you think people would think about if the game had this or that, or what part of the game are the fans going to want to see? And that was really important for me at the time because I wanted to have that going in, those sets of expectations. So then Rob Donahue has worked with me before, and we're old friends from back in the 90s at least, and he's worked on Leverage with me, and he has become quite the Cortex Plus hacker in his own right. I wanted him to help me out with trying to bring some structure to the events to sort of figure out what his thoughts were on how we would do that. And then after that, we had Jesse Scoble, who has worked in the past in superhero games. I wanted his experience really to see what the shortfalls were, maybe one of the lessons he could have he had learned from working in licensed superhero games before himself. And that was very rewarding because he was also able to say, well, when we tried doing it with this system, we found we couldn't, you know, properly do X or Y, and then I was able to sort of find out, well, you know, did this solution, what solution would you have gone with if you had different rules? And I could take that on board and have that help me out too. Phil Menard is my favorite Canadian designer at this point. I could be convinced otherwise to someone else if they want to, but Phil's a pretty strong candidate. He has also worked with me before on Cortex Plus games, and he was one of the folks I hired on for the Dragon Brigade RPG. And one strength that I found that he brought was he could see the design that I'd already done before and dissect it and sort of find ways to take it apart and put it back together again. So I essentially asked Phil to teach me my own game system back to me so I could look at it from a different perspective and use it to alter it for Marvel. And then the last person was Will Hunmarch, who I hadn't worked with before, but I really wanted to. And he really inspired me. He ran a game at Origins last year of Apocalypse World, and he was the MC for that game. And I was so struck by how well he ran that and took the game and just made it his own that I wanted to get some inspiration from him on things like the expectations of game masters, the reasons that these sorts of gameplay choices he makes were good, and maybe some philosophy about game designs in general. Like, you know, what do we have to look for if we want to capture a certain kind of feel in a game? So with the five of them together, they all came, well, I guess it's five, yes it is. The five of them, plus myself, we all brainstormed before I even started writing it, just to try and find out what kind of game we wanted. And once that was done, I got started.
Okay, cool, cool. Yeah, I actually had Will on the podcast a few months back talking about Dragon Age.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good guy, good guy. Well, hey, Stacey, do you have any, before I start rambling on the way that I do in my awkward fashion, do you have any questions that you wanted to ask?
Yes, actually, I've got a couple questions, but I think I have one that fits very nicely at this moment. Because you talked about sitting down to brainstorm with your, you know, with your crew and think about how to approach a new Marvel role-playing game. It strikes me that part of what's made Cortex so, especially the more recent Cortex Plus games, the genius of them has been how very focused they are. Mm-hmm. And for me, the perfect example of that is Leverage, which is one of, I was going to say it's one of the best games ever written. That's probably not the way to say it, because there's a lot of great games. But it's one of the sharpest games ever made. It is, as Giles would say on Buffy, it is honed. It does exactly what it's supposed to do, and it doesn't do anything else. And every now and then someone says to me, oh, can I use Leverage to do something that isn't heist-based?
Yes.
And I sort of go, no, don't do that. You know, if it's not based on a mission, it's not based on a group of experts going on a mission, then it won't work. But, you know, it seems to me that the problem with Marvel, as opposed to Leverage or Smallville or some of these other licenses that you guys have pursued, is that if you just say, what is the Marvel experience?
Right.
It's not so easy to come up with an answer. If you ask me, what's Leverage? You know, if you said, Stacey, write a Leverage role-playing game, I would have written a completely different game. But with any luck, it would have produced a similar output, if you see what I mean. But what, Marvel is...
Yeah.
What is the essence of Marvel? Mm. And how do you capture that? It seems to me this has to be the broadest of all the Cortex Plus games. And I wonder how you take that on and... how you felt about it and how you solved that. When I read that you guys had gotten Marvel, that was the first thing that went into my mind. And I have to I'll be honest with you, my first thought is, those guys are in so much trouble.
Well, we could be.
My thought was entirely one of sympathy for you, is what I wanted. How did you solve that almost unsolvable problem?
I think you hit it right on the head when you know that it's broader. It's still something we had to try and distill down to a few sentences of a vision statement, if you want to call it that. One of the first things that we had put together, I had everyone write their own statements, their own reference documents to give to me from the Illuminati. That's what I called these five guys, because, you know, if you know anything about Marvel's recent history. I took on Mr. Fantastic. That was my job, and everyone else played the different extra parts of it. So we had Doctor Strange and Black Bolt. Matt Forbeck was Black Bolt, because whenever he talks, he just destroys universes. He doesn't talk too often if you don't ask him to, but when he does, he's mighty. So the Illuminati gave me these reference documents, and then I was preparing my kind of concept statement. I had to say, well, here's what we need the game to be based on what you've all told me and what I've already thought about. Because we also had to approach Marvel with this as part of our pitch. We couldn't just say we're going to do a role-playing game based on Marvel Comics characters, because they would have said, well, that's nice, but that's been done three times before. You know, what is your spin on this? And one of the things that I recognize most often about Marvel characters is that, first of all, there's this idea of them being slightly more down to earth, even the ones who are cosmic. They have a sense of actual personality and character and flaws and the things you'd expect people to have if they're a human, as opposed to being just iconic gods that you couldn't touch or see. The second thing was, for me, the most important, though, was this idea of choice and choosing sides. Everything that you do is significant. There's this description of things that's been used before, which is that Marvel's characters make meaningful choices every time they do anything. And the consequences of those choices are what drive most of the storylines after that. You know, huge story arcs have come out as a result of something that someone's had to make a decision about. And it's not always like a very easy decision either. It isn't like a mistake. You know, Wolverine doesn't do something ridiculous and out of character and then lead to a huge long story. He does something that's in character, but which he could have gone either way depending on how he felt or how the writers wanted to spin it. So I think that's kind of the core for me, is a game that lets you make these choices, that hinges upon those choices, and carries with it this feeling that you're playing in a comic book universe, you're playing these characters who are both larger than life and also very human. And that was very difficult to initially think about. We went through a couple of things, but the final result, I think, settles fairly well into those groups.
And what is, how did you do it? Can you boil that down for us? What was the solution?
Well, a lot of it was, how do we actually decide how action works? How do we decide what scenes are like? You know, those sorts of things, you sort of brainstorm a little bit back and forth and say, you know, okay, let's talk a bit about how we're going to put choice into the game. You know, and one of the things is, well, okay, so let's see, like in Smallville and Leverage, you see character sheets have different categories of trait. So I said, well, let's have that be something you have to choose what you're bringing to the action. Like if you want to do something, how are you doing that? Right? So you have to say, I'm using this power, I'm using this specialty, I'm using this distinction, that's the reason why I'm doing this, and so on. So there's a lot of the how in the choice in deciding what your dice pool comes out of. And then after that, you've got things like these milestones, which are a combination of experience point system and role-playing guide and story hook. And the milestone offers you experience points awards for making tough choices or making certain decisions in the game of which you more or less control. The watcher, the game master of Marvel, the watcher doesn't sort of force you to take a decision most of the time. He might, you know, he might set up so that you're in a position where you must make a decision, but you're the one who decides which way to go, and that's kind of how that comes out. And there are a lot of ways we could have brought this idea of choice into the game, but some of them were becoming a little too finicky, and some I just realized we needed to be just put our cards down the table, or dice actually, and just say outright, you know, you must choose this, that, or this. When making characters, for example, you have to decide your three affiliations, whether you're, you have a D6, a D8, or a D10, and one of these three traits. One of them is solo, one of them is buddy, and the third one is team. So right off the bat, we're forcing you to decide, is your character a D10 in team or a D6? Is your character a D8 maybe in buddy or a D6? You know, that kind of thing. You can't have three D6s and three D10s or anything. You have to decide a priority list for how you function in those specific kinds of organizational group. And that was one of the first things we did, just to make it an example of how to get that across.
That's awesome. Tell us about, so long as I've got the talking stick here, tell us about the other thing I think that's really interesting and is going to cause people to ask questions is the way the game is structured around events.
Right.
So this is a good chance to tell people why the game is structured around events, and will there be events for sale in stores that we can buy?
Well, obviously, yeah, we've announced we've got these big event books, and that's the core model for Marvel going on after the basic game comes out. And the basic game, it must be stressed, is not necessarily like a core book that you have to own. It's the first one, and it's designed to be affordable, easy to get, accessible, and has all the rules in it. But those same rules, which we call the Operations Manual, those are going to be in the premium edition, the $40 versions of the event books. If you don't want to buy the rules again, but you do want the event, you can get an Essentials edition for $10 cheaper. And those two books will be hardcover. The basic game is not a hardcover, it's a softcover trade paperback size book. So that being set up, we know we're going to have these event books, and the events are kind of like big campaign settings, scenario collections, sandboxes, character rosters, the whole works. So that's our main publishing model. And when we talked to Marvel about how we were going to put out books, the original way we'd already done things and had done it up until now was a core book and supplements. And they initially had thought, well, you know, you could do a core book and supplements for Civil War and have a Secret Invasion RPG. And they were thinking about them in terms of being separate role-playing games. And I said, well, I think we want to make this the same universe. If we're going to have a universe license, we should do it that way. And so my compromise was, let's use the same rules. Let's present these things as self-contained books, but we'll link them all together with this sort of common event structure model. So we're not calling them role-playing games. We're calling them the events. We're not calling them campaign settings. It's a crossover event in the Mighty Marvel fashion.
Awesome.
Well, cool. Hey, you know, if you don't mind, kind of take us into the rules a little bit, because, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm coming from pretty much a D20 background, and in the playtest, I know that it was kind of an adjustment for me thinking about, all right, how do I build the die pool for, you know, various things.
Yeah.
Any chance I get you just to talk us through, you know, a basic, you know, basic scene? Guys like Captain America, he's trying to fight up some goons from AIM. How would you build a die pool, you know, for that particular scene for what you want to do?
Yeah, well, okay, so let's say it's Cap's turn to do something, and the Watcher's decided that he's going to describe the situation and frame it for Captain America by saying Hydra goons come bursting through the doors of this warehouse, they've all got their guns out, and they're shooting gun bullets that are flying everywhere and bouncing off things. You could even describe that bullets are ricocheting off Cap's shield. That kind of thing is set up. You know, you don't have to go into any specific roll and dice for that. the watcher is essentially telling you, you as the player, that it's a dangerous situation, what are you going to do about it? So Cap decides he's by himself in a warehouse, he's got his shield with him. The usual thing that he does is throw the shield and make it ricochet off things and take a bunch of goons all at once. So that's kind of maybe the thing that the player, if you're the player, you want to do that. You want to try a sort of a ricochet thing. And so that's a case of like, well, first of all, Cap goes down the list and decides, well, what's my first, let me just pull up my version of Cap here. Where are we here? We'll just pause here for a second there. Mic line to it. There we are. Captain America. So he's by himself, so he's got to choose his affiliation first, and his affiliation for Solo is D6. He's actually at his best when he's with a team. It's when he's most comfortable, he's at the highest best performance level is a D10. But he's Solo, so he's D6. And, you know, he's got to choose one of his three distinctions. He could use lead by example, but he's only had lead. It's just him versus some Hydra guys. Man out of time doesn't really seem to work. And Sentinel of Liberty, I think it's probably the most appropriate. He's trying to take down Hydra, and they're a threat to the U.S. And the freedom of the people of this country, so he decides to go with that. And with a distinction, he has a choice of a D8 if he thinks it's helping him, or a D4 if his distinction is something of a hindrance to him in some way. And I think in this case, we want him to go with D8. So right off the bat, we've got a D6 for Solo affiliation, D8 for his distinction. It's two dice. It's not bad. He's got two power sets. He can choose one trait from each of these power sets. His first one is Super Soldier Program, and I think he's using his enhanced reflexes here. He's throwing this thing out, being a ricochet. That gives him a D8. And he's got his Vibranium Alloy Shield, which he's using as a weapon, which is a D8 trait by itself, too. So now he's got D6 Solo, D8 for his distinction, a D8 for enhanced reflexes, and a D8 for his weapon. He decides to go with Ricochet, which is a special effect that he uses for his shield. And special effects, some of them cost plot points to actually make them work. Others just come into gear when you want to use them. So in this case, it says he can step up or double his weapon die against a single target. And well, okay, that's not really happening here. It's not a single target I'm trying to take out. It's a bunch of guys. So he moves down to the area attack special effect, which is much more appropriate. Adds 1d6 and keeps plus 1 effect die for each additional target. So if there's 3 Hydra goons he wants to take out, he can add 2 extra d6 to his pool. And finally, he looks at his specialties to see which of those things makes the most sense to use here. I think Combat Master is the one that's most appropriate because he's going into combat, so that's a D10. He can choose, if he wants to split that up into 2d8s with specialties, he can split them up, or 3d6, but I think we'll go with just a D10 for fun there. So that's his dice pool. And really what he did is he went down as a player and decided what was most appropriate, what kinds of approach he wanted to take, and where he wanted to pull dice from. And I think if you wanted to, depending on if someone else was playing Cap and felt that their version of Captain America was a whole lot more gung-ho and charging forward, you could have used, say, Enhanced Strength instead of the Enhanced Reflexes, and maybe relied purely on your ability to take out one guy at a time and see how that went. So there's a lot of options you could have had for Cap, and you don't really have to go one way and roll one set of dice at any time.
Okay. So you built your dice pool. You roll your dice. What happens then?
Well, you roll the dice. You choose 2 dice that come up to add together as your total. You can pick any of the 2 dice you want. The first thing you do, though, is you take away all the 1s, because the 1s that come at 1, those are called opportunities, and the watcher can hand you a plot point for each of those and add some dice to his doom pool. The doom pool is this growing pool of dice that gets used to do things from the watcher side of things. So that the villain gets to have bonus dice, or the watcher can split the team up, or the watcher can introduce all kinds of things to make life interesting. So once you've taken away the ones and you've got your total, you can then decide which remaining die is going to be your effect die. And your effect die really just says, what kind of dice am I going to use to inflict some kind of effect on the target or situation.
Okay, and that's you know, how much damage you're doing, whether you're emotional or physical to the emotional, physical, or mental to the to the enemy.
You can also use it to set up some sort of thing for your friends. If you were in a team and you wanted to set things up kind of fastball special style with Colossus and Wolverine, Colossus is using his effect die to create the fastball special asset, which he gives to Wolverine's player, and Wolverine's player adds that into his dice pool for free because it's something that's been created by Colossus and he's working as a team with him. So that kind of thing is a way to try to reflect, you know, influencing the environment or setting up the things in a teamwork fashion.
Okay. Yeah, I remember an example we had in the playtest scenario. The villains did something, and as a result, we had a, I guess you call it an effect die. It was either a D6 or a D8 for, oh my god, they got foggy.
Right. Yeah. In the playtest, we found that there was this idea that we wanted to have scene distinctions that weren't on the player's hero data file sheet, but were rather moving around in the scene itself. So Foggy Nelson could be a D4 or a D8, depending on whether he's kind of in the way and gives you a D4 or a D8 for being helpful in some way. I don't really know how Foggy could help you necessarily against a bunch of Hydra goons, but you know what I mean.
Maybe he could distract them with tap dancing or...
The main reason to use these D4s for distinctions is because it's how you get plot points. And that's something else, too. If you roll a bunch of dice and you don't really do as well as you'd like, you can use plot points to keep extra dice into your total. You can use plot points to add more dice before you roll them. You can use other kinds of stuff. They really just affect how the game is played.
Now, plot points, that's kind of analogous to, say, a hero point in Mutants and Masterminds?
Similar to those. Or fate points in Fate, or any game that has some kind of game currency which you can use to spend to make yourself do better than you did before.
Okay, cool. And so the first book, just scanning through it, and I think we said before the podcast, and this is probably one of the best looking games that have come out in recent memory. Just a combination of great layout and all of Marvel art you've got in here. It looks like we're setting up with the plot line from the New Avengers, when Bendis started them out a few years ago.
Yeah, it was one of my favorites, and I really wanted to have something to start the whole line up with that kind of let you assemble your own team from a bunch of characters, and that's the first step in the whole what-if approach we take to it. You know, you might decide, what if Daredevil did stay with the team instead of deciding that he wasn't going to join the New Avengers? He didn't in the end, but I think Bendis at the time wanted him to, and there just wasn't any way, the way things were going with his character's own comic book, he wouldn't really have gone off to join the New Avengers. So, in fact, he only recently did that in the past year, I think. But you could decide, okay, let's play Breakout and stop these escaping villains and bad guys using, The Thing and Human Torch from the Fantastic Four, Cyclops and Colossus from the X-Men, and Captain America and Spider-Woman. And that's your New Avengers.
And you get that big breakout on the raft and just send the supervillains to apprehend. Yeah, it's a pretty cool setup there. And
it seemed to be small enough in scope that it didn't really have to be so huge. But it also gave me a lot of excuses to throw a lot of extra characters into the book so people could play with the game, even if they didn't buy any more event books. They had a lot of villains to use as examples.
Cool. Hey, Stacy, now we were in a playtest group together, but I understand you were also running a playtest on your own.
No, but we were in a playtest group together.
Okay, then I was completely mistaken. I'm sorry. But, the game's almost going to be out. Well, it will be out when we put this podcast out. You want to talk a little bit about what the playtest situation was like for you?
For me?
Yeah.
I loved the playtest. I really responded. I have to say, I'm trying to think about this. There's something about the game. I played a Spider-Man in the playtest. And the first thing I did, you know, I arrived at the island where the breakout is occurring, and there were, escaping prisoners pulling away in motorboats that they were stealing. And the first thing I did was I just said, you know, in any other game, I think I would have, you know, I don't know, jumped into a boat and started punching. But I really wanted to you know, obviously I had barely read the material and I had no idea what I was doing. I said, well, can I just web the boats to the docks as I go by? And not really stop and pay that much attention to this problem, because I want to get on to the more meatier part of the episode. Spider-Man's not going to spend a lot of time with these boats. And it turned out to be pretty easy to do that. And I was very impressed. And I have to say that I like the way it reminded me in some ways of some of the I'm often attracted to lighter games. Cortex Plus can be kind of deceptive because it's a strange sort of hybrid sometimes between, I think, a sort of crunchier games and lighter games, in that it can be very, very simple at the core, and yet it can be sort of intricate at the edges with things like keeping rolling ones that turn into opportunities and things like that. But what I really liked was the general sense of pacing. The structure of the game didn't require us to sort of, I don't know, roll our way through every pile of sand, if that makes sense to you. We just sort of rolled the interesting things, which is a goal I've often heard refs say at the beginning of a game. We're not going to roll every detail, kids. We're just going to pay attention to the interesting stuff. But in my experience, that really doesn't always work. And I found that the Marvel heroic role playing really keyed us in that way. I was really, really intrigued, and I think that this is going to be a game that's going to see a lot of, more than other Cortex Plus games, it's going to see a lot of repurposing. People are already asking me, well, is this going to be good for Star Wars? And you know, the answer is if it's good for a comic book. That is, if it's got action and it's interesting, and yeah.
Yeah, I mentioned that the first time I talked to Cam back when this was the Vigilance Press podcast back in the day. It seems like this engine would be awfully handy for third-party publishers to do a variety of things with. Have you guys considered that at all, or is that not really something on the horizon?
You know, we always consider this idea. I mean, one thing we're doing is considering removing the rule system from Smallville and at some point in the future potentially releasing that as dramatic role-playing games. You know, so these things are always on our horizon as things we want to think about, but it's much more important for me to get these products out and have them be on time and so forth than to sort of spend any extra time thinking about how to third-party license stuff. It's not like a thing where we say no, we won't. But I want to get it moving to a nice mature period where we think that it's supporting itself nicely enough. People have played it enough times. We've seen enough of the sort of hacking and drifting online that we think it's a good time to do that. Because I would love to see the heroic role-playing version of Cortex get a lot of love from third party eventually. But it's not something you do just willy-nilly. You don't just throw it out there and say, go for it. I think that we have to consider, what sorts of elements we would have to add to it, even if we were to take it away from Marvel, in a sense.
Understood. You know, I read a remark on RPGNet a while back that kind of struck me as funny. It was, it was an old D20 guy, made some remark about how you guys were kind of backdooring a lot of narrative game design into the mainstream.
Yep, it's true.
I'd definitely say that's true. And that's great. It's also, if I may say so, not to misuse this gaming term, but I'm now going to misuse a gaming term. There's a gamist element, what I would call gamist element, frankly, because of all the dice.
Yeah.
And the hero points. There's a way in which there's a lot of sort of narrative control, although I notice you don't always just get narrative control. You win narrative control.
Mm-hmm.
You fight to gain narrative control. It's I joked about a talking stick earlier. It's not unlike a game where there's one talking stick and a whole lot of Nerf batons.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it.
you know, I want the talking stick, darn it all. And you roll for it in some cases. I remember a moment in the playtest I was in where Wolverine essentially defeated a bunch of escaping criminals by staring them down.
That was actually me, yeah.
Yeah. And it was a wonderful scene, but as it was nicely done, and it was great fun, and it was very Marvel. But mm-hmm. I was on my way. I was coming. I was going to help you. I really saw that as a great, because it seemed like a Spider-Man moment, that Spider-Man would swoop in and mm-hmm. say something funny. I had no idea what I was going to say, alas, or just as well, because but you didn't need me. And there was something about the way that you it felt very right to me that Spider-Man would look over and go, oh, boy, Wolverine's, oh, no, he's got it.
you know, it's true. I think that really points out one other side of this, which people ask us about, and there's the power level scale and whether there's enough way of giving the sort of less powerful characters the spotlight. And I really believe the system kind of forces that to happen. It makes it so that you have to give it up once in a while, because it is not always your turn. And even if you're the most chatty player and the one who normally dominates the game group, there'll be a point when you'll be having to sit there and wait until someone else has passed the stick back to you.
Yeah, I think it kind of emulates, boy, I'm going to start engaging in a game vocabulary here that maybe I'm not suited to, but yeah, I guess just saying because it's more narrative, I mean, every character plays a role, you know, whether you're the Sentinel or whether you're Spider-Man, and, you know, you influence the story as much. You know, heck, Spider-Man doing something as character-driven as revealing his identity was, you know, crucial in Civil War.
Yeah.
It really changed the tone of things tremendously. Heck, it might have had more effect on the tone of that, you know, event than Sentry did, because Sentry spent most of the time kind of, if I remember right, sort of being angsty in his penthouse apartment.
He went off to space to the Inhumans. He kind of hid on the moon.
Yeah.
And Iron Man had to come and get him.
That sounds like Sentry. I'm going to chill out here and think about myself for a while, you guys. Yeah. I hear they're bringing him back. They said there's going to be a big, big resurrection in Marvel Comics the next couple months, and he's one of the ones they're talking about.
Wait, I thought he was dead.
He is.
Well, but then he can't come back. He's dead. Okay, let me explain the meaning. Oh, no, wait. Never mind.
Well, they're also talking about Jean Grey. Now, I think Wasp is already back, if the issue I read last month was any indication.
Is she
I'm a bit behind, so I go to the comic book store about every 4 months, so I...
The one that I follow all the Avengers titles except for Avengers Academy, which I think is where I'm missing out on a lot of the extra fun stuff. And I get all them. I also get, right now I'm getting Wolverine, the X-Men, and maybe a couple of X-Men titles. But I think that I'm noticing with the Avengers vs. X-Men, the AVX coming up, they're setting up a lot of that stuff with, it's going to be very central around Hope, who is just exactly like a reborn Jean Grey in some ways anyway, and Scarlet Witch, who are those two characters. But I've seen cover images of Iron Fist with a Phoenix logo on his chest, which is awesome.
That is pretty cool.
that's very cool. But I think we're sort of missing the point here, which is what people are really waiting for is the Avengers versus Defenders crossover.
Which group of Defenders? Because there have been a few.
It's the current one.
The original one from, I think, 78 or 79, whenever it was, something.
That kind of is that group right now. In fact, that's something else about this that interests me is that with Iron Fist being involved in the storyline, he's currently with the Defenders that Doctor Strange has put together. That Matt Fraction's writing a series of Defenders.
Oh, and that's true. I have not seen that. Again, I lag behind comic book time.
It has Red She-Hulk in it, who has become one of my favorite new characters because I like She-Hulk anyway. And this is Betty Ross.
Yeah, and her dad is the Red Hulk, right?
Right. It's great. I mean, people sort of sniff their nose up at this whole idea, but Red Hulk is a really interesting character all by himself because he is a general and as strong as the Hulk. And, you know, then you've got his daughter, who everyone thought was dead for the longest time, is she feels like a mousy character who finally got the strength to do anything she wants. So she spends most of her time walking around with this gigantic, big, badass sword and, like, chopping things apart with it. it's a very interesting kind of exploration of these characters who have been around the comics for quite a long time.
You know,
so when do we get her writer?
Yeah, later.
It's going to be the answer for a whole lot of things.
Yes. I can promise Captain Ultra there, I think, in the 50 States Initiative book. We'll put Captain Ultra in there.
Really?
Everyone wants to see Captain Ultra set because he's afraid of fire and has someone randomly rolled his character set, I'm sure, at some point.
Because he's I'll accept that.
And his costume is the worst I've ever seen anybody. And you just can't make it look good. So, go looking for Captain Ultra if you need it. Google him and then laugh a lot.
Well, I thought every time I get you on, Cam, I think I'm a comic book geek. And then you, like, bust out some knowledge that makes me realize that I'm merely a Padawan at the Master's foot. Captain Ultra. That's one I've never heard of.
You don't know Captain Ultra? He's a character. He tries to join groups and doesn't get in. I keep waiting to see him go to a Legion of Superheroes tryout, but the dimensional walls are too thick or something.
So the one character, the one group that he did manage to join, mm-hmm. was recently in the Avengers Annual and the New Avengers Annual. Brian Michael Bendis decided to have Wonder Man finally decide to have he's had enough with the way the Avengers are operating. He tells the Avengers that they're interfering too much in the world, and they've gone too far. So he puts together what looked like this reject team of Avengers, right? It has Captain Ultra in it. It has D-Man, Demolition Man.
Oh, he was dead. Cool.
Yeah, he's back, and apparently...
Yeah, that turned out to be a mistake. He was alive.
It has that guy Sentry from Forceworks, who was one of the most ridiculous... He's the white-haired, old-looking space dude. Uh-huh. A number of characters. And in fact, even Atlas from the Thunderbolts, I don't know what happened to him. He also had a bit of a depressive episode because he comes back in here as the team size-changing guy. But this group is called the Revengers, and Wonder Man actually wipes the floor with the new Avengers at the Avengers Mansion, Luke Cage's team, takes them all out, including like Thing and Ms. Marvel and all of them, because he apparently put together the right combination of idiots that actually worked.
It's actually a really nice moment. That's the most recent comic I've read, and I enjoyed it very much. Well, when do we get that?
Later. I don't know. We'll see.
We're still working on Civil War and the Annihilation Event. We got a while to go before we get to
Continuity.
And speaking of the Annihilation Event, that's a very cool book, and I'm hoping to have Dan Abnett, one of the main writers of that, on the podcast. He tells me next month he's got a big announcement to make.
That is awesome. I would love to. And I think I'm still going to try and go after him, hopefully with your help, and see if we can get him to write an intro for that.
Well, if I can actually nail him down to get on the podcast, I'll invite you to join us.
Awesome.
So I had him on two or three times last year, and I've been chasing him for the last 8 or 9 months. So we shall see if this actually materializes. But that'd be
cool. I don't want to corner anybody there on the podcast. That's kind of awkward.
Yeah. It's
fun, though.
Oh, yeah.
That's one way to look at it. No, we try to be nice to our guests, especially the minor celebrities like comic book writers, so they'll hopefully come back one day. So,
yeah.
All right, well, cool. So this is coming out about a week. This is Valentine's Day, so we're talking about the 21st.
The first book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And how much is that going to cost our listeners?
Well, the PDF is going to be available on the 21st, and I think we're marketing it. We're selling it for $12.99. The PDF. There's $20, $19.99 in hub and soft trade paperback format.
That's a very reasonable. Margaret Weiss Productions, folks, a friend of the working man.
Yeah, I think that if you can afford to go to movies one night, you can probably pick up the basic game easily, you know. And also, if you order from a preferred retailer, it's a store that's set up with us to be a preferred retailer, or from our own online store, you can get the PDF for free with your book.
Oh, very nice. That's a nice bonus.
That goes for all of our products, actually. I mean, you could even buy some more of them and get the PDF for free now, too. And all of the ones that we sell and that are sold by retailers, we guarantee you that you'll get PDF. This doesn't apply to, like, the big box stores or for Amazon or anything else. You get a pretty good sizable discount from them anyway. We're trying to support the hobby stores and comic book stores.
Oh, cool. All right. What, anything else you want to cover tonight?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think I could probably give you a good enough breakdown of the rules anyway. I think you should just go read the book.
Yeah, and people should. Folks, take it from Stacy. You're going to love this game. Sorry.
Nice. Well, Cam, I know you're a busy man, especially these days. I really appreciate your time.
I really appreciate you inviting me back on. I love doing this. Let's talk to people.
Okay. Stacy, I know you're busy as well. Thank you very much for giving us your time tonight.
It was great fun. Thanks for having me on, and thanks to Cam not for coming on the show, because I don't care about that, but thanks for really putting some of the Marvel spirit into this book. It's not perfect, but actually it's awfully good. good material. The only thing I'll say is someone came up to me the other day and asked me if I said I don't like Cortex Plus, am I going to like this book? And I said no. You know, I probably should have said yes, but nothing is for everyone. But I think this is the game that's going to blow Cortex Plus wide open for a much broader audience.
I will say, if you don't,
and that's bad for me. That's bad for me because when this call started, I was the go-to Cortex Plus expert. In a month, everyone's going to be a Cortex Plus expert, and no one's going to care, about what I have to say. So this is probably goodbye for me, but it's well worth it.
I don't think we can ever replace you, Stacy. You have an inimitable presence on the air.
Well, you do play by play, and I do color, and it works out just fine.
Nice. Okay. Any other one-liners? Very simple.
My card is blank. We're all done.
All right. Thanks. Hey, all right, folks, thanks for tuning in to another session of Banff Podcast. Make sure you check out Marvel Heroic Roleplaying at the venue of your choice, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks, folks.